How does your fear dress up? We each have a gremlin that causes us to be difficult on our worst days. I can tell you my biggest gremlins are being excluded, feeling weird, and being different. My gremlins pop up anytime, anywhere, for a host of different reasons. When I'm extremely nervous, I still get hives on my arms and legs, so I have to constantly check for them in awkward social situations and spend most of the time praying I won't have a breakout. I don't like the taste of alcohol, so I'm always nervous about being the party pooper and unfun invitee, and often volunteer as sober driver. I have a really hard time hearing in loud rooms, and almost always end up being the last to arrive and the first to leave. Mostly, I'm terrified that who I am will turn people off. My fear dresses up as awkwardness. When I'm in a survive situation, I clam up, make terrible, offensive jokes, and can't stop talking. No, really. I don't shut up. Guess what happens next? Yep, exactly what I feared most. People think I'm weird and different, and then exclude me. In a crazy way, our fear makes our gremlins come true. I have found that our gremlins make us act in predictably difficult ways. They fall into these four categories. Downers. Example, the character of Sadness in the movie Inside Out. Downers are very negative, always complain, and are extremely pessimistic. What's difficult about them is they're impossible to please. Their gremlins are their fear of being rejected, so that they reject everything and everyone first. The next kind of difficult person is a show-off. Example, Blair Waldorf from the TV show Gossip Girl. They brag, act like they're better than everyone else, and tend to be know-it-alls or one-uppers. The difficulty with them is they're narcissistic. Their gremlin is their fear of being forgotten or undervalued, so they feel the constant need to prove themselves. The third type of difficult person is a passive. Example, Toby Flenderson from the TV show The Office. Passives are typically very quiet, they never ask questions, and tend to not contribute or be pushovers. The difficulty with passives are they're invisible or they're non-contributors. Their gremlins are they fear being criticized or judged, so they try not to give anyone anything to criticize by shutting down and not participating fully. The last category of difficult people are tanks. Example, Louis Litt from the TV show Suits. They're often explosive, bossy, dramatic, and overly emotional. The difficulty with tanks is they're dramatic and overreactive. Their gremlins are they fear being out of control, so they take control. They also fear being forgotten, so they engage in attention-seeking behaviors. All of us tend to fall into one of these categories on our worst days. Be honest. Which sounds most like you in your bad moments? Don't worry. You are not alone, and it is not your fault. There's a neurological explanation for why you feel this way. The science of fear. Joseph Ledoux, a New York University psychologist and neuroscientist, studies what he calls fear learning, the way our brains learn to detect and respond to external threats. You might not be surprised to learn that fear is processed in the amygdala. Remember, this is also where we process pleasure and produce dopamine. Ledoux found that the amygdala's fear responses can travel by not one, but two pathways. The fast, low road, between the thalamus and the amygdala, and the slower, high road, which begins at the thalamus but takes a detour to the neocortex before reaching the amygdala. Low road. This is the fast, automatic, primary fear response that helps us react quickly to a threat. The low road helps us survive. High road. This is a slower, more logical, secondary fear response that helps us think through a threat. The high road helps us thrive. Let's say you're driving down the street and an accident happens right in front of you. Immediately, your low road kicks in, within 12 milliseconds. You hit the brake, your blood starts pumping, you suck in a breath of air, and your eyes go wide so you can take in more of the scene. About 30 to 40 milliseconds later, your high road jumps in. It processes what you just saw. Should you call 911? Do you need to help the drivers? Should you pull over? This fear processing system works great, most of the time. The problem is the low road and the high road have two slightly different goals. Our low road wants us to be safe, protected, and secure. It wants us to survive without bodily harm. Our high road wants us to make good decisions that help us thrive. It wants us to have connections, reproduce, and be happy. Sometimes these goals are aligned, and sometimes they aren't. The two paths do not always reach the same conclusions, explained Ledoux. For example, if you are afraid of rejection, your low road can kick into threat response mode. The moment you enter a difficult interaction, you get sweaty palms, feel flushed, and have the desire to take flight. This low road response makes it impossible to be witty, build connections, or have a relaxed conversation. Psychologist Dr. Daniel Goleman calls this emotional hijacking. Emotional hijacking. When your low road is in an emotional fear response, you cannot connect with your high road, make logical decisions, or act in your best social interest. He believes emotional hijacking is the reason social situations can be difficult, and why difficult people can be difficult. Your gremlins are not just distracting. They force you into survival mode. Have you ever tried to have an intelligent conversation when you have dry mouth from nerves? Ever tried to be funny when you felt awkward? It's almost impossible. This is because your ape-like low road is slowing down your clever high road. Emotional systems tend to monopolize brain resources. It's much easier for an emotion to control a thought than for a thought to control an emotion, explained Ledoux. Triggers from your past can also condition you to react fearfully to relatively minor events. Let's say your crush laughed in your face when you asked her to dance at your 8th grade prom. You remember blushing uncontrollably as her friends giggled and pointed at you. You began to sweat and couldn't breathe deeply. Low road. You had no idea what to do, so you ran out of the room and hid in the bathroom. You decided to wait there until the dance was over. High road. As an adult, every time you enter a dark club with loud music and approach a woman to dance, your low road kicks in. It recognizes this scenario and the time it didn't go so well, so you begin to sweat, blush, and hyperventilate before you even talk to the girl. Your low road is telling you, run, hide in the bathroom, don't talk to her. Even though your high road is telling you to approach the girl, and it has been a long time since your 8th grade dance, your low road is emotionally hijacking you. This is why, in the social game plan hack, you narrowed down your survive and thrive places. It's impossible for you to implement people hacks when you're in low road, survival mode. I want to get you into situations where your low road can stay quiet to allow your high road to take over and be your awesome self. Difficult people don't do this well. I don't believe difficult people are bad people. I believe they are being emotionally hijacked the majority of the time. Their fear puts them in constant survival mode, and their gremlins make it impossible for them to compassionately connect or rationally compromise. We know that lots of people have fears they can't come to conscious terms with, said Ledoux. Our emotions are fully capable of overriding reason. The question is, how can we help difficult people overcome their fear and be more socially smart? The nut job. Sometimes nutty people drive me bat poop crazy. When someone's gremlins are too much for me to deal with, I use a simple technique that I call hack number 13. The nut job. When dealing with difficult people, name the emotion, understand the feeling, and tame the fear. N for name, U for understand, T for tame. The nut job both prevents crazy and calms crazy. This powerful little hack is a simplified version of a hostage release technique taught by Dr. Mark Goulston. Yes, dealing with a difficult person can be like negotiating with a kidnapper. Let's put on our big boy pants. Step number 1, name. Most gremlins are a product of not being recognized, accepted, or heard. You can quiet these fears by showing someone that you do recognize, accept, and hear exactly where they are coming from. This is done by the first stage of the nut job, naming. In naming, you are trying to find the answer to, what is this person afraid of? The moment you identify the emotion someone is feeling, you open a release valve for their anxiety. Sound easy? It is simple, but for some reason it feels counterintuitive to most of us. Typically, when someone is emotional and we are not, we try to counterbalance them by staying calm. But this doesn't work. In fact, it usually only infuriates an upset person even more. Here's a common example that happens between men and women. Woman, I'm so upset about the promotion at work. I'm so pissed that I didn't get it. It's just so unfair. Feelings, seeking to feel validated. Man, yeah, but at least your review is coming again in 3 months. Hopefully you'll get it then. Feelings, trying to stay calm. Woman, 3 months? Are you kidding? I've been there for 5 years. I shouldn't have to wait. This is basically them telling me that they don't value me at all. Feelings, getting more and more upset as her fear is not heard. Man, no way. This is just a coincidence. I don't think them hiring her has anything to do with you. Feelings, please, please, please remain calm. Woman, are you saying they are forgetting all about me? You're right. They probably hadn't even considered me for the position. If that's the case, I might as well quit. You are not helping. Feelings, officially upset and jumping to crazy conclusions. This conversation quickly escalated. The man was trying to help, but the woman wasn't looking for a solution. She wanted to be heard. All the man had to do was listen for emotion words, words that indicate inner fears. Then he should have worked those exact same emotion words into conversation to validate the woman's concerns and prompt her to say more. The script would go like this. Woman, I'm so upset about the promotion at work. I'm so pissed I didn't get it. It's just so unfair. Feelings, looking to feel validated. Man, I can't believe they did that. It's incredibly unfair. I can see why that would be so upsetting. Feelings, repeating her emotion words, unfair and upsetting. Woman, I know, I'm just so frustrated. I've been working there for so long and it seems like they overlooked me. I'm afraid they will fire me or never give me a raise. Feelings, feeling heard and going deeper. Man, I get it, so frustrating. And it's impossible to do your best work and be happy at your job when you're afraid of being fired. Feelings, validating fear, using her words, frustrating and afraid. Woman, yeah, I just don't understand. Feelings, feeling misunderstood by her company, but understood by her man. Man, did they give you any explanation at all to help you understand it? Feelings, moving into step number 2, understand. In this version, notice that the man is simply reflecting the emotion words back at the speaker, trying to get to the root of her fear. This helps him comprehend what's going on and allows her to sort out her emotions. Once she feels heard and validated, then she moves into stage 2 of the nut job, understanding. My favorite phrases for naming. You seem, are you feeling, give me a sense for what you're feeling. Special note, decoding microexpressions is also incredibly helpful for naming, especially when someone isn't being as vocal about their emotions as you'd like. Naming an emotion you read on their face is just as effective. Step number 2, understand. Once someone feels heard, their low road fear begins to disengage and the high road starts to kick in. Already, you're dealing with a more logical, rational, and relationship-oriented person. The goal of the understanding phase is to unpack emotions behind what's being said. During this time, you are trying to get as much information as possible, help them process as much as possible, identify their primary value in the situation. You want to find the answer to, what is this person seeking? Let's revisit the above example in step 1. See if you can guess what her primary value is. Woman, yeah, I just don't understand. Feelings, feeling misunderstood by her company, but understood by her man. Man, did they give you any explanation at all to help you understand it? Feelings, moving into step number 2, understand. Woman, well, they announced it without any warning at the meeting today, and they did it in front of everyone. I swear it felt like half of the room turned and looked at me because she got the title I was hoping for. Feelings, revisiting the moment of the gremlin attack. Notice the woman uses without warning, in front of everyone, looked at me, title. Man, do you think they will tell you more about it next week or at least explain to the team why she got the promotion? Feelings, seeking to understand the gremlin and fear. Woman, I mean, it's not like I need the promotion right now. I just feel really out of the loop. It would be fine if I knew that I was on some kind of track for it. I just feel so in the dark. Feelings. Identifying the underlying fear. Notice how the woman used out of the loop, new, and in the dark. Based on her answers, it sounds like her primary value is information or status. Say the man asks more questions and narrows it down to information. This is key information. Wanting a promotion right away is one thing, but merely wanting to know if you're deserving of a promotion and whether there is a timeline in place is a very different goal. Here's where the next step of the nut job comes in. Transform. My favorite phrases for understanding. Tell me what happened that made you feel this way. The reason you're so is because what caused this? Step number 3, transform. Once someone is fully in high road, their fears are disengaged and they've worked through the problem out loud, you can begin to transform the problem into a solution. Note, do not try to move on to the transform step until you are fully done naming and understanding. If someone is still speaking in a loud voice, tearful, or flushed with emotion, they are not done processing yet. Once someone gives a big sigh of relief, begins to talk at a normal level, and sounds more like themselves, then you can move on. In the transform stage, you have two options, speed read or use their appreciation language. If you can offer answers or facilitate a resolution, even better. Sometimes, as with many problems, they cannot fully be fixed. In that case, you're best going into appreciation language mode. You can at least value the person and make them feel less alone. During this stage, you're answering the question, what does this person need? Returning to our previous example, here's how to execute this step. Woman, I mean, it's not like I need the promotion right now. I just feel really out of the loop. It would be fine if I knew that I was on some kind of track for it. I just feel so in the dark. Feelings. Identifying the underlying fear. Man, do you want to send an email to your boss asking for a meeting to clarify early next week? Feelings. Moving into step number 3, transform. Woman. Probably. I can ask to sit down with her to go over my next quarter goals. Feelings. Thinking about how to address her primary value. Man. Yeah, and we can even prepare information for her on what you're working on, so hopefully she can give you more insight on what's happening on her end. Feelings. Helping her get her primary value met. Woman. That's a good idea. Feelings. Feels the problem could be resolved. Man. Of course. Hey, I'm sorry this is rough. I think they are crazy not to appreciate you. What can we do this weekend to make you feel better? Feelings. Success. He got her back to calm and thinking about next steps. In this situation, the man not only calms down the woman in a difficult situation and difficult mood, but also becomes her support. When you name, understand, and transform someone out of their difficulty, you become their ally. My favorite phrases for transforming. How can I help? What needs to happen for you to feel better? What role can I play in making this better? What role can you play? The nut job system is not about trying to change people, which usually only makes them double down on their bad behavior, but about valuing them and providing deeper understanding of a problem. You can't argue with a feeling, but you can acknowledge it. When you value difficult people, they will be less apathetic, angry, and fearful, and more compassionate, understanding, and open. However, you will meet difficult people that don't respond well to even the most empathetic tactics. Their fear is so ingrained that they become impossible to deal with. I call these people toxic, and not in the poppy Britney Spears spirit, but in the radioactive, poisonous kind of way. Bonus, how to say no. Toxic people constantly throw you into low-road survival mode. They push boundaries, challenge your worth, and can even turn thrive situations into survive ones by waking up your gremlins. Toxic people are not worth your energy. However, many of us have low-road fears about saying no. We say yes out of habit or because it's scary to set up boundaries. Or, let's be real, we feel we don't deserve to stand up for ourselves. It's time to give yourself permission to say no to the toxic people who drain you. You deserve to interact on your terms, with people you like. When you say no to the wrong relationships, you make room to say yes to the right ones. Here's how to say no. Step number one, eat humble pie. Saying no doesn't mean you should be ungrateful. You can set boundaries and say no without offending anyone. You can start with, thank you so much for asking. How wonderful of you to offer. This is a lovely idea. Step number two, no hemming and hawing. Don't beat around the bush. If you hesitate or waver, toxic people will sense weakness and try to change your mind. Be clear and concise. Try this. I'm so sorry I won't be able to join. I won't be able to get together. I can't come. Step number three, no excuses. This is the most important step. You don't have to defend, debate, or explain your feelings. That's right, you don't need to give a reason. In fact, when you do offer an explanation, even when it's legitimate, it just ends up sounding like an excuse. Offering a why also gives toxic people room to argue with you. And oh, they will. Toxic people do not like when boundaries are placed on them. Here's what happens when you try to offer toxic people a reason, real or not. Toxic person, you have another party? No worries, just pop over for a little. Toxic person, you're busy? I'm busy too. This will only be 20 minutes. You have to get coffee at some point, right? I'll just meet you for a little catch-up. Toxic person, don't worry about being tired. You'll get energized with all the drinks. Special note, if you have trouble doing this in person, you can always ask for time to think about an invite. Say you have to check your calendar, and you'll get back to them in a few days. You can also email or text a response so you can choose your words carefully. Sometimes hard to do when face-to-face. You'll get more comfortable with practice. Optional step, step it up. If you get an invitation you're not crazy about, sometimes you can make a counteroffer. For example, a friend of mine invited me to her birthday at a pool hall. I knew it would not be my scene, nor a good way to catch up with her. I offered to take her to brunch that morning instead, which worked out better for both of us because we really got to talk. You could say, I can't go to dinner, but let's grab coffee instead. A meeting won't work, but let's hop on the phone. Sorry I can't make the party. Can I take you out to brunch tomorrow? I know it's hard to say no, but this sets you up for growth. Sometimes, farmers have to burn their fields in order to make way for a healthy crop. Fire is a natural part of the ecological cycle. The old crop's residue and weeds must go. They call this process a controlled burn. Do you need to start your own controlled burn? Clearing out the weeds makes room for new growth. For Social Gonzalez, learning to say no was one of the most difficult parts of her professional growth. You want to help everyone, but not everyone can be helped, said Gonzalez. This job taught me how not to be a people pleaser. I don't hold myself to other people's compliments or requirements. I have my own standards for excellence, and I hold my ground. If I suspect someone can't handle that, I don't work with them. You cast the people who you want to play a role in your life. Choose wisely. Challenges. 1. Think about the 5 most important people in your life. What are their gremlins? 2. Take a hard look at yourself. What are your gremlins? How do they dress up? Bonus. Do you have a toxic person you need to slowly release from your life? Chapter review. Everyone has social fears. When you address someone's fear by seeking to understand it, you can transform a problem into a solution. This approach can make you an ally of the most difficult people. Know how your social fears dress up. Name the fear, understand the emotion, and transform it. Just say no to toxic people. Fill in the blank. My biggest takeaway in this chapter is... Chapter 14, Engage, How to Turn People On. My hero is coming to dinner. This is what I said to my husband as I frantically prepared dinner, cleaned up the house, and tried to look as presentable as possible. New York Times bestselling author of Predictably Irrational, behavioral science icon, and TED Talk star Dan Ariely would be at my house in 30 minutes, and I was freaking out. A few months earlier, Ariely found my email address and sent me a note saying he enjoyed my YouTube videos. After screaming for joy, briefly passing out, and overcoming a long bout of uncontrollable hiccups, I was able to reply coherently and even mentioned some new research I was working on. Thus began our geeky friendship. Now Arielle and his wife were visiting Portland and stopping by for dinner. The moment Arielle and his lovely wife Sumi walked through the door, I was starstruck. But I quickly realized that Arielle wasn't there to impress us. He was there to learn. Over appetizers, dinner, and two bottles of wine, Arielle asked questions. Instead of talking about his groundbreaking work and research, he gently and curiously turned the spotlight on everyone else at the table. My husband's work, his wife's opinions, my goals. By the end of the evening, I was floating. I felt like I was on a relationship high, and it had nothing to do with Arielle's professional accolades or fame. It had to do with his unique approach to people. Dan Ariely has an intense curiosity. It comes across not only in his work, he has 4 books and 5 TED Talks with over 13 million views, but also in his everyday interactions. His sincere curiosity makes him incredibly engaging. Ariely's inquisitive nature is also responsible, at least in part, for his tremendous success, beginning with his decision to follow his current career path. When Arielle was 17 years old, he accidentally set off an explosion that burned 70% of his body. For months, he went through excruciating surgeries and skin grafts. During this process, he faced the ultimate torture, getting bandages removed. Have you ever had to take off an old Band-Aid? You can either rip it off quickly, a short, intense pain, or you can pull it off slowly, less intense pain over a longer period of time. Arielle recalled, "The nurses in my department thought the right approach was the ripping one, so they would grab hold and they would rip, and they would grab hold and they would rip. And because I had 70% of my body burned, it would take about an hour." As soon as Arielle got out of the hospital, he enrolled in Tel Aviv University, where he began to do experiments on pain, tolerance, and relief. "At the end of this process, what I learned was that the nurses were wrong," said Arielle. It turns out that the best possible way to minimize a patient's pain is not to rip off the bandages quickly, but rather to go slower with less intensity. "My nurses had no idea," explained Arielle. "They'd been confident in their opinion to the point of irrationality, despite the evidence staring them in the face." This simple, powerful discovery was the first of many for Arielle. He has built a career out of making seemingly irrational behavior predictable. He engages people with his distinctive brand of curiosity, and his inquisitiveness has brought him tremendous success. How can we adopt Arielle's approach? In this final hack, let's find out. The science of popularity. What makes someone popular? Researchers at Columbia University were surprised to find that popularity isn't correlated with physical attractiveness, athleticism, intelligence, or humor, but to certain brain patterns. Specifically, popular people are more attuned to other people's popularity. In their study, Noam Zerubbabel and his team asked participants from 2 student groups to rank each other by popularity. They then put each participant in a brain scanner and flashed pictures of the group members they had just ranked. They mixed in a few fake pictures. Students had to quickly press a button indicating whether the picture was real or fake. They found that all of the participants, regardless of their own popularity, had more brain activity in the reward center of the brain when viewing the faces of popular people from the group. Simply put, popular people literally make us feel good. This might be why we are so drawn to watching celebrities on television. But here's the most interesting part of the study. There was a significant difference in the brain response of the popular students. The most popular participants had the largest neural response when viewing fellow popular students, especially in the social cognition part of the brain. In other words, popular people are more attuned to social signals, social hierarchy, and relationships, and they place higher value on these cues. Popular students were also more aware of their own social status and more accurate at guessing how well liked they were by others. The authors suggest that popular people are popular because they enjoy trying to understand what people around them are thinking and feeling. They call this enhanced social attunement. Now I understand what happened at dinner with Dan Ariely. I was hit full force by his ability to attune to me. The way he thinks changed the way I felt. First, let's be real. My mental reward center tingled by his world-renowned social status. And then, my social cognition system kicked into thrilling gear by his desire to get to know me. This is how you turn people on. You don't impress people by mentioning your accolades, accomplishments, or awards. You impress them by mentally turning on their reward systems. Here's the great news. Regardless of how popular you are, anyone can learn how to be more socially attuned. Social attunement. Growing up, there were two small letters that sent chills down my spine. P.E. Physical education class was the bane of my awkward, prepubescent existence. The moment I walked into the musky locker room to change, my heart would start to pound. As I surreptitiously tried to change without flashing an inch of skin, sometimes even wearing a second bra as insurance, I would desperately search for any excuse to escape the daily drills and dodgeball games. Paper cut? Haircut? Apocalypse? I tried them all. Looking back, I realize I liked playing outside. What I really dreaded was the moment my coach said, "Line up, let's pick teams." Inevitably, the two jockiest kids were assigned as team captains, and then I spent an agonizing few minutes watching them go through my entire class before picking me or my fellow non-athletically inclined buddy, Smelly Matthew. Then one day, my elementary school social life changed. Our coach decided to allow the new girl to be team captain. She had just transferred from a nearby school and didn't know anyone. In one of the greatest moments in PE history, she picked me first. I was so excited that I ran over to her and then held her hand while she picked the rest of our team. I think we lost in soccer that day, but I was on top of the world. After the game, I asked her why she picked me, and then she said one of the greatest things anyone has ever said to me. "I wanted to get to know you." As humans, we so desperately want to be known. We want to feel like people get us, like we have someone on our side, like a group wants to have us as a member. Making people feel this way is called attunement, and it is one of the most underutilized social skills. When we attune, we are more receptive to and more aware of those around us. Attunement is also about acclimatizing or harmonizing with the people we are with. This is the final hack we will learn. Hack number 14, attunement. Turn people on by making them feel wanted, liked, and known. We are often so wrapped up in our own thoughts, schedules, and agendas that we forget to tune into other people's feelings, needs, and values. Special note, this is the only hack that should be wielded selectively. It is one of the most powerful tools for connection and should therefore be used only with those whom you truly want to build a deep connection with. The world is full of obvious things which nobody by any chance ever observes. Sherlock Holmes. Here's how attunement works. Number one, reciprocity. Stanford researcher Van Sloan studied the social skills of 2,437 high school students across counties in Northern California. He wanted to know which social skills predicted likability as measured by their peers. First, and not all that unexpectedly, he found that likable students tended to be more optimistic and upbeat and had higher self-reported levels of general happiness. But then the results get a bit more interesting. He found that the most likable students also liked the most other people. Popular students showed their liking for others through higher levels of friendliness and smiling. For females, number of smiles per day was 2 times more significant to their popularity than physical attractiveness, wrote Van Sloan. The more a student smiled at their classmates, the more their classmates smiled back at them. This made them feel liked, which made them like that student even more. We are more inclined to enjoy being with people who visibly enjoy being with us. In social psychology, this is called the reciprocity effect. We like people who like us. We also feel the need to give back the kind of treatment we receive. So if someone smiles at us, we smile back. If someone asks us questions, we feel the need to ask questions back. If someone shares a vulnerability, we feel the need to share a vulnerability back. Every hack you have learned in this book so far was to engage the reciprocity effect. Hack number one, the social game plan. When you say no to survive situations and embrace thrive situations, you encourage people to also interact in a way that works for them. Hack number two, the triple threat. When you show up with trusting, confident body language, you inspire the people you are with to be more trusting and confident. Hack number three, conversational sparks. When you break social scripts with conversation sparks, you engage your partner's need to respond in kind with more interesting, exciting tidbits. Hack number four, highlighter. When you highlight people's strengths, you not only bring out the best in them, you also encourage them to see the best in you. Hack number five, thread theory. As you search for threads of similarities, you inspire people to hop on the Me Too bandwagon. Hack number six, the decoder. As you tap into and respond to people's true emotions, they are more incentivized to be direct and learn about yours. Hack number seven, speed read. When you respect someone's true personality orientation, you show how you would like to be treated. Hack number eight, appreciation language. Finding the energy to appreciate someone on their terms teaches them how to truly care about someone so they can return it to you in kind. Hack number nine, primary value. When you show someone you value them, they are more inclined to respect your primary value. Hack number 10, the story stack. The more great, witty, clever stories you share, the more people will want to tell you theirs. Hack number 11, own it. The more you empower others, the more they will see you as a leader. Hack number 12, the Franklin effect. The more vulnerable you are, the more vulnerable people will be with you. Hack number 13, the nut job. Your calm, direct communication both calms the people you are with and shows them how to direct communication back to you. Hack number 14, attunement. The more you show you are interested in someone, the more interested they will be in you. Here is the key to being popular. Like more people. When you are with someone you enjoy, consciously engage the reciprocity effect. Start and end phone calls with, "I'm so happy you called." Start and end emails with, "I'm so glad you emailed me." Start and end interactions with, "I so enjoyed spending time with you." Invite people to sit with you during lunch and at parties and conferences. When people join your group, table, or meeting, make them feel welcome. As people leave your group, table, or meeting, thank them and tell them you appreciate their time. Duh, I hope it goes without saying that you should do this only with people you actually like and are grateful for. Attunement should always be authentic. Number two, belonging. TV mogul and entrepreneur Oprah Winfrey has interviewed thousands of people in her years as a TV host. What has she learned from all of these experiences? She says, "There's one desire we all share. We want to feel valued. Whether you're a mother in Topeka or a businesswoman in Philadelphia, each of us, at our core, longs to be loved, needed, understood, affirmed, to have intimate connections that leave us feeling more alive and human. The greatest gift we can give the people we encounter is to help them feel accepted for who they are. When my elementary school friend picked me to be on her team, it was one of the first times I felt accepted. When she wanted to get to know me, I finally felt like I was being heard. And when we finally became best friends and sat together every day at lunch, I finally felt I belonged." Why is belonging so important? It's hard to talk about people without mentioning Abraham Maslow's classic hierarchy of needs. Maslow theorized that all people have five basic needs that must be met in order to thrive. They are, starting with the most basic, physiological, safety, love and belonging, esteem, self-actualization. After our basic food and shelter requirements, our needs become dependent on nourishment from our relationships. If we truly care about people, we can attune to them by helping them with their needs for the top three areas. Love and belonging. Searching for and capitalizing on commonalities that show them you are an ally. Hack number five. Getting to know their personality traits and respecting the way they want to interact. Hack number seven. Discovering and speaking to their appreciation language. Hack number eight. Esteem. Asking them meaningful conversation sparkers about who they are and what they are passionate about. Hack number three. Having high expectations and finding the best in people. Hack number four. seeking to decode their true emotions and encouraging honest interactions. Hack number 6, being vulnerable and encouraging them to be honest about their fears and worries. Hack number 12, self-actualization, finding their primary value and helping them realize it. Hack number 9, empowering them to customize their ideas and actions and giving them purpose with why. Hack number 11, finding the source of their difficult behavior and helping them solve problems instead of judging them. Hack number 13, as you improve your social skills, you also help the people you care about to meet their needs. Special note, do you feel like you belong? Do you have people who make you feel accepted, heard, and valued? If not, there is a whole community of people just waiting to meet you. Since starting The Science of People, I have made lifelong friends who geek out on people science, love trying out new social experiments, and embrace the upside of awkward at our anti-networking events. Come join the local readers in your town. We have the link to the Facebook group, forums, and live anti-networking parties that accompany this book in your digital bonuses at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. Number 3, curiosity. Dan Ariely turned a painful, traumatic experience into a learning opportunity. Instead of being paralyzed by the memories of ripping bandages, he got curious about them. His desire to learn more led him to major breakthrough discoveries about pain that have helped thousands of patients, doctors, and nurses around the world. Curiosity cured. If you're like me, you might have your own painful social experiences. Maybe you were bullied in school. Perhaps even today you feel excluded by peers. Researchers at UCLA found that physical pain and social rejection activate the same parts of the brain. In other words, when we are rejected, it feels like we are physically hurt. We asked people on Twitter what would hurt more, a broken arm or being broken up with. Only 24% of people said a broken arm, while 76% of people said being broken up with would hurt more. So how do we protect against the pain of social rejection? I believe curiosity is a cure-all and a great engagement technique. When you are curious about the people you are with, it is easier to come up with conversation sparkers. When you are curious about someone's motivations, it is easier to decode their personality matrix. When you are curious about your own interactions, you can find patterns to help you get better next time. Every single interaction is an opportunity to understand more about yourself and the people you are with. Being curious about someone is one of the best ways to show you like them. My favorite way to get curious is to set up my own mini social experiments. Now it's your turn to put a personal spin on the human behavior hacks I taught you. Here are some mini experiment ideas. What's your go-to conversation sparker? Try out a few conversation sparkers in the next few weeks and pick your favorite one to rely on. Where is your favorite sweet spot on the social game plan? Try standing in all three of the sweet spots and pick the one that works best for you. What's your favorite story? Try telling your friends a few stories from your story stack this weekend and see which one gets the best response. Which were your favorite hacks? Think of your top three hacks and come up with a mini experiment for each. You can also think about mini experiments you can try with specific people in your life. Your riser. What hack would make your riser feel great? Try one of the hacks with them to connect, bond, or get to know them better. Your winger. Would your winger be brave enough to try and experiment with you? Can you guess each other's appreciation languages or go out for a social adventure to try new sparkers? Think about one mini experiment you can run with them. Me. Want to play with me? I would love to do some mini experiments with you. We are always testing new questions and hacks with mini experiments in our online lab, and you can jump in too. We have our latest experiments in your digital bonuses at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. These mini experiments not only help you get more curious about yourself and the people around you, but they also enable you to start activating all of the hacks in this audiobook. Special note, I hope that as you listen to this book, you're asking yourself, would this work for me? Am I brave enough to try this? Turn those musings into one big question. How can I make this work for me? Curiosity is the final step in the final chapter of the final hack, because curiosity should be the driving force behind every human behavior hack you use. leveling up. At the very end of one of my phone calls with Dan Ariely, I asked him what advice he would give to people wanting to have more captivating interactions. He told me this. From time to time, I sit next to people on a plane or at a conference and they want to talk. Even if I'm not in the mood, I know that if I want to have a good discussion, it's up to me. I can't blame people for not being interesting or not being good to interact with. I take full responsibility for my interest. Even if I am different from someone, I try to learn from them. Even if I am not interested in something, I try to engage in a new way. I believe we are responsible for having captivating conversations, interactions, and relationships. You are in charge of how you want to interact. You have the power to be captivating or not. We are the only ones who can level up our relationships, so let's do it. Challenges. 1. Pick your top 3 favorite hacks in this audiobook and set up a mini experiment to try them this week. 2. Tell one person how much you enjoy spending time with them. 3. Schedule one people skills adventure with your winger. Chapter review. Don't impress people, engage them. Turn people on by showing them you are turned on by them. Attunement is about allowing people to be themselves with you. And the more people we truly like, the more people will truly like us. Engage the reciprocity effect by showing people you enjoy being with them. Help people feel like they belong. Let curiosity drive your interactions. Fill in the blank. My biggest takeaway in this chapter is... What's next? Congrats! You made it! We have done a lot together. In part 1, the first 5 minutes, we talked about turning strangers into acquaintances, quickly building trust, and making a lasting first impression. In part 2, the first 5 hours, I taught you how to speed read people in order to identify their needs and predict behavior. In part 3, the first 5 days, we explored how to turn casual relationships into lifelong relationships with stories, vulnerability, and ownership. Your interactions will only get better from here if you put these hacks into practice. Albert Einstein once said, "Information is not knowledge. The only source of knowledge is experience." Listening to this audiobook is great, but I want you to experience it. Go back to the PDF that goes along with this audiobook and take the PQ test again. You can use this test as a check-in once a year to make sure you retained the information you heard in this audiobook. And be sure to check out our 7-day challenge. 7-day challenge. The end is just the beginning. As you keep leveling up your interactions, I want to help. I have created a 7-day free email follow-up series for you to keep learning after this audiobook. You'll get tips, challenges, and stories to help you put what you learned into action. You will get all of the 7 email challenges when you sign up for your digital bonuses at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. Remember, I'm here for you. If you'd like to check in about something you heard, just email me at vanessa@scienceofpeople.com. Tell me your favorite hack, share a story, or just drop a line to say hi. I love hearing from you. Thank you for letting me take you on this people skills adventure and letting me share my stories with you. People skills changed my life. I hope they are now beginning to change yours. Cheers, Vanessa. More digital bonuses. Along with all of the digital bonuses we have mentioned throughout this audiobook, we also included some fun extra resources for you. First, an invite checklist. We have a to-do list from the book that you can use as a checklist before your next event or when you get your next invite. Second, a personality cheat sheet. Have trouble remembering all of the personality traits? Don't worry. We've got you covered with a printable personality cheat sheet. Third, matrix practice. Need some practice on the matrix? Fill out a matrix for your favorite TV characters with our exercises. Get everything at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. See if we are hosting an anti-networking event in your city. scienceofpeople.com/meetup. Corporate workshops. Do you know the personality matrices of each of your colleagues? Do you know if you have a predominant appreciation language in your office? Let's find out. I love working with corporate teams, doing company retreats, and giving keynotes. My research team builds custom people analytics reports for your organization based on the content in this book. If you'd like to work with me, please visit scienceofpeople.com/speaking. Acknowledgements. Oh, my amazing husband. He is usually the first person I try experiments on and the last person I explain things to. I have to thank him first and foremost. Thank you for letting me set up secret experiments all over our house. Thank you for letting me have the TV on Monday nights to watch The Bachelor. It really is for work. Thank you for letting me have a courageous, out-of-the-box, crazy career and supporting me every step of the way. Thank you to my incredible agent, David Fugate, who started me on this fantastic whirlwind. And huge thanks to the entire portfolio team, especially my tireless editor, Nikki Papadopoulos, who has walked me through every step of the process for this book and pushed me to realize its potential. I am truly lucky to have had you and Leah Trauburst as partners for this book. I also have to thank my photographer, videographer, and friend Maggie Kirkland, who is the creative genius behind many of the photos used in this book and accompanying in the PDF along with this audiobook. She also took the cover shot and author shot for this book. You are brilliant, and I am lucky to have you. Another big thank you to Madeline Roosevelt for cover shoot makeup and hair, Robin Allen for styling, and Christopher Sergio for the design. Thank you to the amazing models and actors throughout this book, Max DeBowie, Orion Bradshaw, Paige Hendricks-Buckner, Lacey Kirkland, Scott Edwards, and Danielle Baker. Thank you also to the team at Creative Live, Chase Jarvis, Kimberly Murphy, Brian Lemos, Meg Guyman, Chris Jennings, and Kenna Klosterman for nurturing my courses, making my curriculum come to life, and helping me grow as a teacher. I would like to give a special shout out to Chris Guillebeau, Jordan Harbinger, Tammy Hernandez, and Helen Raptis for allowing me to share your platform and share my heart with your audiences. Thank you to all the wonderful people who let me interview them for this book. Ariel Dremeray, Lewis Howes, Jeffrey Carrillo Toscano, Dr. Paul Ekman, Richard Nicolosi, Paige Hendricks-Buckner, Boyd Vardy, Andrew Borer, Frank Warren, Nicole Payone, Mark Gordon, Christy Dragon, Sochil Gonzalez, and Dan Ariely. Your stories are changing the world. And thanks to Matt Scott, Mark Goulston, Emily McDowell, and Jay West. Thank you to my masterminders who keep me accountable, read sample chapters, and get together to come up with kick-ass ideas to take over the world. David Moldauer, Stephanie Zito, Dr. Samantha Brody, Devaney Friedman, Jean-Marie Milkovic, Tara Gentili, Amy Yamada, Emily Triggs, Jenny Trigg, Elizabeth Steig, Gideon Arome, Thursday Bram, Carrie Chapin, Katie Lane, Sean Ogle, Tyler Tavorin, Mike Pacchione, Charlie Gilkey, Alex Franzen, David Nihil, Jim Hopkinson, and Zach Suchin for helping me get studies. And thank you to Aaron Adams, Dennis Yang, and the entire team at Udemy for giving me the very first online platform to launch my online courses. Thank you to my amazing Science of People team. First, Danielle Baker for editing every line of this audiobook, being the most amazing support system, and just being a great friend and colleague. You are brilliant, and I can't wait to help you grow as much as you have helped me. Thank you, Haley Lusich, Jose Pena, Robbie Smith, Emily Lundberg, Ellie Wu, Ben Cook, Lauren Freeman, Nick Pathidis, and Maria Baez for your countless hours, creativity, and strategy with the Science of People. I also want to thank our Science of People interns and our Science of People body language trainers around the world for spreading the message to a global audience and taking our work to the next level. I couldn't do this work without you. I am so grateful for all that you do for the Science of People. Thank you to my friends who not only had to put up with me while I wrote this book, but also let me run experiments on them. Margot Aaron, Lacey Kirkland, Brennan Pathidis, Ed Piper, Barry Turetsky, John Boylston, Anna Lauren Boylston, Stephen Scott, Christine Scott, AJ Alley, Kelly Alley, Tony Del Ponte, Aaron Georgiadis, Emily Occupinti, and Alex Occupinti, Gwen Hickmond, Pam Potts, and Tate Newberg. I also want to thank Rec Studio for hosting us while we record this audiobook, Russ Gorsline and Jessica Kay for helping me get it together. Thank you to my family for getting me through my awkward years and giving me the best education a girl could get at Marlborough School and Emory University. I used every ounce of those writing courses, psychology classes, and science classes in writing this book. Love you, Anita First, Vance Van Petten, Stacy Van Petten, Courtney Van Petten, Haley Van Petten, Robert Forrest, and Lindsay Forrest. And thank you to Deborah Edwards, Richard Edwards, and Laura Edwards for welcoming me and giving me Scott Edwards. And finally, I need to thank our Science of People readers. That's you! Thank you for letting me try out new conversation sparkers on you. Thank you for filling out my weird surveys on Twitter and my website. Thank you for letting me smell you in my pheromone experiment. Thank you for letting me film you, interrogate you, and test weird things on you. I could not have written this book without your bravery and willingness. This is Vanessa Van Edwards. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Captivate, The Science of Succeeding with People. This program was directed by Jessica Kay, executive producer Juliana Wilson. Text copyright 2017 by Vanessa Van Edwards. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.